He told her he would love to get to know her a little bit better over some coffee. She mentioned that she was in a relationship and they had one-on-one meetings. Anyways, long story short, I want to hear about some stories that you've had if you've ever dealt with this kind of thing.
But there's definitely, you gotta draw boundaries right away because some clients are going to try to push that professional relationship to something beyond that.
Life. Awesome, awesome. Assalamualaikum. Welcome everyone to another episode of Muslim Point of View Podcast. We have a very, very important guest with us here today, Fadi Shaar, also known as the Achilles Guru. Really, really excited to have you here, Fadi. How you doing today?
Walaikum salam, man. I'm doing great. Not that important of a guest, but
To
definitely doing
us, you
great.
are, man. To us, you are. Awesome. So just a little background of Fadi. Of course, you recently graduated in kinesiology. You actually own your own clinic at the moment, Omnicure Physio. You also had a couple of other internships at Physio Sport, and basically all this to say, you definitely are someone who's got the credentials, let's put it that way, to fix people's bodies whenever they put themselves through a lot of train wrecks, let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. What's been your path? What inspired you to become a physiotherapist overall? Just a little bit about that.
Absolutely. So I actually graduated from my master's in physiotherapy. So I did a bachelor's in kinesiology, a master's in rehab science, and a master's in physical therapy.
Inshallah.
What got me into it, honestly, was that it's a wide range of things. I grew up playing sports. I played soccer for about 10 years. I played football for a couple of years. Very active. I have also an older brother and a younger brother who are also very active. And we were always in sports. So injury was, the routine. We'd go, we'd play, we'd get injured. And then my brother got his ACL surgery. And when he got his ACL surgery, he was going to physio and I was with him. And that kind of gave me the first glimpse into physical therapy. And then my father is actually somebody who has had, he spent a lot of time at the hospital. He's had several illnesses over the years, and that kind of pushed me to want to do something in healthcare, give back. And I saw how the people were with him, and that's really triggered me to want to go into rehab.
Gotcha. Was it like a negative experience overall or a positive experience when you say that?
It's a special experience
Okay.
because when
Gotcha.
you have the person who you look up to, somebody that you care for a lot, who's going through a lot of medical issues and spending a lot of time in the hospital. Like my dad is a so we're gonna go on a little tangent. My dad came here, he was 18, he came to Canada. Graduated in electrical engineering, but was on a student visa, so never practice in electrical engineering. He went to Cégep Saint-Laurent, University of Laval, and ended up being a taxi driver, like a lot of Middle Eastern people, Lebanese people who come to Canada. They end up either owning a restaurant or being in the
Taxi
taxi
driver.
industry. So he'd work a lot and never take vacations. And whenever he'd have time off, is because he was sick.
But yo, he graduated in Canada. Well, I mean, was it like a tough job market or? Because usually
Tough.
people who don't have jobs, at least it's because they graduated overseas, so they don't recognize their stuff here.
No, he did his CEGEP here, he did his university here, and he was on a student visa, so he couldn't work. And by the
Oh.
time he got around that student visa, look, he needed to make money. He was in a different field and never looked back.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, that kind of echoes a lot of similarities with my own father, to be honest, who came from Lebanon and same kind of concept. He was a teacher there. He was hoping to come here and teach as well, and unfortunately, it just didn't pan out. So he also became a taxi driver, and he had to just kind of pursue that career to make ends meet for the family, right, and provide. So that's
Yeah.
yeah, it's a very interesting story. So what are some of your interests within this sphere, like within physiotherapy overall? Like, what would you say is like your specialty or part of what interests you overall?
Specialty, the Achilles, that's for sure. I've over the years developed, you know, an affinity to the Achilles, given that I had the surgery myself, and it was a really tough time. So I really dived into the Achilles. But other than that, just rehab in general, like just seeing people who come in injured, feeling some type of way, and leaving the office just feeling a lot better. Sports is something I'm leaning towards more right now in my realm. But I treat everybody. I've had somebody as young as 6 years old, and the other day I had somebody who was 87.
Damn.
Yeah.
If I did, I was wondering about you actually in terms of the Achilles. I know that three people that I know got the same injury in the last couple of years, and honestly, before that, I've never heard of anybody getting Achilles injuries, and they were all like early 30s. What's up with that? Like, is there a trend post COVID? Did something happen where the Achilles, like, people are tearing it for some reason?
There's definitely a trend post COVID. So it was a common injury before, but you wouldn't see it so often in clinics. I had never seen it myself. I had been working in a clinic for years as a physio aide, as an assistant, and I had never seen it. I actually had seen one, and that was pre-COVID. But then post-COVID, everybody was just getting Achilles tears. It was crazy.
Okay, Fadi, I actually want to jump in into a different subject. So I want to read out a Reddit story and just get your take on it. So let me jump into it.
All right.
So my girlfriend has been dealing with an injury for over a year now, and she has multiple different medical professionals of different types to potentially fix it. She has struck out multiple times until finally stumbling across a non-corporate PT gym that has been doing absolute wonders for fixing her problems. She had two sessions a week for 3 weeks and one follow-up session for some lifting form. Totaling about 7 sessions. The sessions involve a stretching portion that was heavily based on partner stretches, as well as massaging portions of her back, hip, glute, and groin areas. All of them very reasonable. The trainer who did this portion is 24 and male. I, the boyfriend, initially had qualms about this, but they're professionals. And so other than asking for some extra loving from my women, I didn't have any other complaints. The trainers were all very friendly, as they tend to be, and so they would make consistent small talk with my girlfriend. The male trainer, Mr. Hansi, according to his girlfriend, asked girlfriend for her number, and he had it in his records, so the fact that he was asking was definitely not a great sign. After the session, he told her he would love to get to know her a little bit better over some coffee. She mentioned that she was in a relationship, and you know, they had one-on-one meetings. Anyways, long story short, I want to hear about some stories that you've had, if you've ever dealt with this kind of thing.
Absolutely. Okay, so we'll break apart the two components of this. The first part is that she had tried to get help from a different type of client, like a different type of clinic, and it didn't work out, which resonates with me a lot, because a lot of those big chains are trying to get you in and out. They don't really, you know, it's more of a money machine, which is hence why I moved to a more private type of clinic where I can spend a bit more time with my patients and connect with them a bit more. And that second part is something I deal with, not on a daily basis, don't get me wrong, but there's definitely, you got to draw boundaries right away, because some clients are going to try to push that professional relationship to something beyond that. And it's always a fine line, but as long as you keep it professional, listen, I think that asking a patient's number or trying to get to know a patient outside of that professional aspect, first of all, is not something that we are allowed to do as a physical therapist. We have an order that, you know, looks to make sure that, you know, all the practices are ethical. And
so you've never heard of anybody doing this, like any colleagues or anything?
For sure, I've seen colleagues who've gotten married to a patient. I used to work with a colleague who's gotten married to a patient.
And how does that look upon?
Look, you They're married now. Listen.
Happily ever after.
Happily ever after. Listen, I'm not saying that you can't find the love of your life, but it's not the place to do it. I just had a client come in, and she was telling me how her trainer felt very comfortable talking to her and would make inappropriate comments, and she didn't know how to deal with that. So you're coming and you're paying your hard-earned money and you're giving your confidence to that one person who is supposed to be there to help you make a positive change in your life. So this time it was a trainer, so that person was trying to lose weight. Now imagine that the person that you are confiding into is crossing that line. It puts you in a very tough predicament.
Look, I don't think it's excusable what the trainer is doing, but I don't think that the girl was smart to begin with if she's putting herself in that situation. Personally, that's my take. Like, I'm controversial like that, but I'll say it like it is, bro.
For context, the guy was what, 25? Is it or
24?
Yeah. 24, and then the chick was 20, basically. So she's, you know, right in that area, like right in that range, right? And her boyfriend's 25. Like, why would you put 25?
Yourself in that situation?
But so listen, that's more of a trainer situation. But as a healthcare professional, if I cannot deny anybody who comes in through my door, I legally cannot deny anybody who comes in through my door.
What if the person, I'm sure you've had these stories, but you know, like if BO is out of control or like fungus is coming out of places, like what do you mean you're going to take them in because legally you have to?
It's happened. I had a patient once. I'm not sure if I'm crossing professional boundaries here, but
you know, don't give names, obviously.
No, obviously, yeah. We're not giving any names here, but he had an Achilles injury, and he had not taken the cast off since he was in the cast, and then they put him in a boot, and he had never taken the boot off. He wasn't given proper instructions on what he was allowed to do and what he wasn't allowed to do. Oh man, there was skin falling off. I'll spare the details. We're all fasting here.
So what do you do? So what do you do when that happens?
You got to be polite. You got to be courteous. I represent a brand that's bigger than myself. So you have to take in consideration that not everybody understands the same things. So you have to approach it in a way where you're getting the message through without being rude or impolite, but still firm, because I have other patients who have to come in after him. There's, you know, lingering smells. But it's a part of the game.
It's rough. It's rough. I'm sure you didn't behave in a way where you're like, oh man, that smells really good. Also, like the other way around, right? For sure. Like,
oh no. It was absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. It's probably hard to hide the true feeling at the time, but I totally understand. Like, you have to maintain some level of professionality, of course, no doubt. But yeah, I think the biggest caveat there is the other patients in the room who, you know, you can't control how they feel or how they will act. Absolutely. Necessarily, right?
If I had a question for you, and this is not because you're my physiotherapist, but I've been seeing you for like 6-7 months now for different injuries. What's your opinion on someone seeking a second opinion because they're not happy with the service they get? I'm not going to do it to you. I like the service, but I'm just saying, like,
I always recommend it. I recommend a second opinion, but what I do not recommend is two treatments at once. All right. Because what ends up happening is you can get a second opinion. You can get a third opinion. Opinions are great. It's everybody has their way of approaching a problem. As long as your goal is to get to that same solution, that's fine. However you get to that solution, there's a million ways. But what happens when there's two therapists who are working on the same patient at once, and let's say that the patient sees improvement. Who is that improvement coming from? Is it from the first therapist or the second therapist? What happens if there's pain? Is it from that first therapist or the second therapist? And if ever that is the case, if ever there's an interprofessional approach where there's more than one therapist involved, those therapists need to be communicating together to make sure that there's a continuation in the treatment. That there's not
How about like, how about if I'm seeing a physio and I'm like, you know what? I think a chiro might help me or an acupuncture.
I have my reservations on different healthcare professionals that are my personal reservations. I'm not against chiros, I'm not against acupuncture, but they're great for certain things. And then within the field, you have great therapists, and then you have, therapists who need to work on improving their crafts. So if, it's a, it ends up being a personal choice at the end, but
So you're basically saying the person can go, and you don't need to necessarily coordinate with the acupuncture or the chiro, but most likely they won't see the results that they'll see with you.
not that they'll see with me. No. You're putting words in my mouth right now. But no, it's
He's
not that they won't see
stirring
with
the
me. It's
pot.
so let's go back to the idea of Omnicure. So Omnicure, Omni means everything. Cure is that we cure everything. Coming from the background that I have a bachelor's in kinesiology, there's two masters, physical therapy, and then a massage degree. So I have a nice overview of the field. Obviously, Kairos can bring in a lot of benefits. Osteos can bring in a lot of benefits. Acupuncture can bring in a lot of benefits. But if you want to see the most benefit to your specific situation, whether it be you or anybody else, you want those professionals to be working together. And not just, I'm going to see the physio, and then the physio doesn't communicate with the osteo, and the osteo does X, Y, and Z. And maybe the physio has an approach where we're trying to get you, let's say for your shoulder, more shoulder range by working the lower lats. Or the rotator cuff, and then the osteo has a different approach, and they kind of, bump heads
Conflict.
together with
Yeah.
getting you the best results.
Gotcha. And that's I assume that's very sound advice overall. I'm sure like you wouldn't be the only professional who gives that type of advice, but does it ever complicate things also maybe from like an insurance perspective or anything like that if there's like a double dip going on?
I don't think so. Not necessarily. Like, you have your insurance. Are you talking about private insurance right now?
Yeah, mostly private.
Yeah, if you have private insurance, and you can go see and do whatever you want. It's the healthcare professional's job to make sure you're coming in to get the treatment that you need.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Have you ever had anyone who was like using it to like almost justify not working or, guys who. Yeah, they kind of slip the, they might exaggerate the pain. Maybe it's like a four, then it's like a 10, when they see you, it's the end of the world.
So I've had a patient, and it's a funny story. So this patient was on, she had suffered a work accident. Okay. And she was in the waiting room of the clinic, a clinic I used to work at. And I came up to her to be like, "Hey, so-and-so, how are you?" And that I caught him by surprise. I caught the patient by surprise, and the patient had a neck injury, and the patient just, she was on her phone. And when I came up to her, she kind of got scared, so she went like this. She snapped her neck back. I made a mental note of that. Then she came in. We did the treatment, and I start with my questions. "So, how are you feeling today?" She's like, "Oh, I can't move my neck. My neck is very stiff. I can't even, look behind my shoulder." And I'm just like, "But like 5 seconds ago, you were, you snapped your neck back, and like." You were fine. You were just surprised. So it happens. It happens. Different people have different reasons of, prolonging their time out of work. So yeah, I also deal with patients who have pain, but it's a biopsychosocial. So they also have, they're suffering from a burnout at work.
Gotcha.
So the burnout at work is not going to help reduce the pain. It's actually going to sometimes increase the feeling of pain. So you're, it's a very delicate balance. So
Is that
bio,
established science?
psychosocial. Oh yeah, for
I
sure.
don't know,
And
man.
I was just reading something about the Achilles, that 10% of people who do get Achilles ruptures, it comes from like a sense of anxiety and stress that they have in their life as well. So it definitely plays a role that you, what you think and what happens in your brain translate directly with how you feel.
You know what? It's chill. It's chill. Go ahead, Noor.
How much of a percentage would you say it plays roughly? Like if you had to estimate, 30%, 25%,
20%? I think it's like this. It's interrelated, interlocked.
Gotcha.
So okay. Let me give you an example. And there's a great book. It's called Explain Pain. Sometimes when people do have that, you know, biopsychosocial aspect to it, where pain is no longer just a physical component, it's also a fear of getting injured. I refer to that book a lot. I ask them to read, you know, the first one or two chapters. And pain is something that is expressed by the brain. So let's not get it twisted where pain is something that, you know, you are creating in your brain. No. It's something that, let's say you feel something that's going to go back up to your brain and it's going to ask your brain, how do I respond? And your brain is going to say pain. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm really bringing it down here. But the idea is that, have you ever watched a movie and somebody gets injured and you feel pain for that person, but you're not injured? You actually feel the pain. That's because it's an output of the brain.
So, yeah, but some pain is good pain. Like, for example, going to the gym and, you know, like working out, that's painful, but it's good pain. Absolutely. Obviously, there's some pains that it sucks, but it sounds like there's, at least when it comes to doctors, for example, when I herniated my discs recently, right? I came to you for that. My doctor kept pushing for painkillers, and I don't want it, because for me, the pain is, it's chill, man. Like, yeah, it hurts a ton, but I don't want to. Like, the pain is my body telling me your stuff needs to, like, you need to relax. Like,
yeah, whoa. Take it easy.
Absolutely. But some pain becomes what we call chronic. So you're still in the acute phase. What happened is still relatively recent. But some people have a pain that's become chronic. So let me give you an example, okay? Your brain's role is to protect you, okay? I dislocated my shoulder playing football. I was running towards a guy, and the guy was in my sight, maybe 2 feet away, and I got blindsided. There was somebody else here. They hit me. My shoulder popped out. It was the most painful experience of my life. They popped it back in. I had surgery a couple of years later. And what I tell people is that this shoulder is made in 2018, while this one is made in 1991. So this is an old shoulder. This is a new shoulder. But even after rehabbing it, even after, you know, withstanding the test of time and proving to myself that this shoulder was, you know, good, it was back to ready to play, me trying to tackle somebody afterwards was something that my brain would tell me, Fadi, don't do it. Don't do it. I had to relearn how to bring down that anxiety, bring down that stress of, hey, you can go back to tackling without the fear of it dislocating again. It's not going to dislocate. So there's a process of going back, even once you've rehabbed and the pain was gone, the muscles are strong, getting back into those activities that first led to that dislocation, your brain is like, uh-oh, we have to stop. Which is why also in boxing, when somebody gets knocked out, they're more susceptible to getting knocked out again.
Yeah.
Because let's say somebody hits you in the jaw here and that hit knocks you out. Whenever you get hit somewhere close to that place, your brain is going to be like, okay, time to shut down again, as a way to protect you.
Yeah, yeah. It's like there's the physical trauma part of things, but then there is the mental trauma part of things that also probably needs to be cured in a way to really get the full package, the full cure.
Absolutely.
That's very interesting. That's very, very interesting. And actually, I was watching a recent like interview, Randy Orton, who's like one of a WWE wrestler, right? And so it's very physical work. You have to like lift people and. And he said, you know, when he first started, he was like suplexing people. And, you know, it was just like a regular lift. Like you're putting a person's weight vertically on your shoulder. And he popped his shoulder. And since then, he's like, I don't want to do any suplexes anymore. So then like he started working very differently in the ring as a result of that. Like, so I can imagine probably a lot of athletes maybe have that aversion and then they maybe play completely different. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe they fold. They kind of start favoring another play style, or maybe they start, you know, favoring their left hand as opposed to the right hand. That's very interesting.
So when I was playing football after that injury, so before the injury, it was a choo-choo train. If you're in front of me, whether I needed to tackle you or not, we're going through you. after the injury, it's, you know, If I don't need to tackle you, I'll go around you.
You'll move around.
The goal is to get the ball from point A to point B. Whether I do it by going through you or around you, as long as we get there, that's the goal. We can still play football. We just have to change a bit of, you know, our strategies.
Adapt. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
If I do, for people between 20 to 30 and then 30 to 40, what are the most common injuries you see, specifically for those two groups?
Ooh, that's a very good one. Oh, look, I can confidently say 30 to 40 is lower back pain. It's lower back pain is like number one. I get people who come in for, you know, lower back pain that, you know, translates into sciatica or X, Y, and Z. So that's definitely 30 to 40. 20 to 30 is, you know, it's prime time. It's prime time. I haven't seen a lot of people between the ages of like 20 to 22. You know what I mean? Between the ages of 20, 22, 23, they don't really come by. It's more of a, you know, that's when a lot of people peak. It's a prime period of their life. So injuries tend to, you know, dissipate a lot faster. But 23, 24, 25 to 30, it depends how active they are. If they're into sports, you know, I've seen a lot of ACLs. Obviously, being the Achilles guru, the Achilles guy, I've seen a lot of Achilles.
So besides back pain for let's say above 30, what else are you seeing? What are the most
shoulders? Shoulders. So people who spend a lot of time working at their desk end up developing a posture, which is, you know, we call it the tech posture, or like, you know, they often refer to it as a tech neck, but which is the neck forward, because people are always in this position here. But that's not just the neck being forward, it's also the shoulders being rounded. You working in a small space. The pandemic has brought upon us years and years of you know, working and in bad positions. So some people, you know, weren't equipped at home. So I see Noor has this crazy setup in the back, and he's got the gaming chair and the whole nine. But some people were not equipped to work from home. So the kitchen table becomes the office. The kitchen chair, which is, you know, meant for you to eat a meal, you know, 1 hour a day or an hour and a half per day, is, you know, your 8 hour desk. So yeah, that's, you know, shoulders and lower backs.
And so, Fadi, do you think there's a growing amount of people who are becoming more conscious about best practices, or do you feel like it's the same as like 20 years ago, where people are just, you know, they just live life and they don't really practice some very important things that if they practice, it would avoid a lot of these injuries?
Look, knowing what to do and doing it are two completely separate concepts. So I have the people who come into physio, like Abdullah, and, you know, he's got a game plan. He's like, listen, I've read this, I've seen this. What do you think about this? I'm going to do this, this, and that. How many times can I do it? Can I do it more than this? What happens if I, you know, they have questions, they're ready. And then I have the other group who come in and they expect me to do everything. And when I give them exercises, they don't do it. But they know that in order for their injury to leave and never come back, or, you know, reduce the chances of it coming back, they have to do A, B, and C. So sometimes, even if you know best practices, it's
one thing to know, different thing to do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So if you can choose, only three stretches to avoid some of those injuries, just general injuries that people see in their life, let's say lower back, shoulders, just three stretches, you can only recommend three.
It wouldn't be stretches. It would not be stretches. To avoid injury, obviously being active is very important. So what I say to people who do work that desk job, who that give them, you know, lower back pain or shoulder pain, I tell them to break up sedentary time. So they go from a seated position to a standing position. Ideally, in an ideal world, we're talking every 20 to 30 minutes just to get up and walk. But sometimes we do get consumed by the work that we have to do. So one would be break up sedentary time. Two would be just the ergonomics of where you're sitting. So making sure your chair is adjusted, you have proper lumbar support. Because that lumbar support is going to really help prevent you from being able to sink into your seat and slouch. It's going to force you to be a bit more upright. It's going to disable that ability to fully slouch. So one would be breakup sedentary time. Two would be ergonomics and the lower back support. Three, just walk a bit. I don't know. Be active a bit.
The lifestyle itself. Okay, we're going to move on to another section right here. We're just switching gears. We have a little segment that we're going to be doing. It's called Impossible Questions. So we're going to ask you a question, but we're really going to limit your choices, all right? And you got to be really, really like careful with how you choose whatever we're going to ask you. So here goes the first one. If you can only choose one, a person who eats clean all the time but never works out or stretches, or a person who eats horribly all the time but works out and stretches, which one would you choose?
Horribly all the time, works out and stretches. Gotcha. Easy peasy. It depends how horrible, but yeah.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. What about this one?
But hold on. Why? Yeah, why?
Physical activity is super important. Super, super important. You've got guys who will eat bad, but then if you're able to perform in the gym, burn those calories, lift weight, it's been proven to be, you know, the solution to a lot of problems. But obviously, we got to limit the range of eating clean and the range of eating dirty.
I'll give you an example. Okay, I see so many guys at the gym who they're there all the time. Okay,
yeah.
But they clearly have an extra 70 or 80 pounds on them, but they're there all the time, and they're an example of someone who eats horribly and then thinks that by working out and stretching, you're compensating for it. But I know other people who never work out, who literally just eat clean, and I can see the difference in their health, at least visually, but I can also tell, like, this person is much, much healthier. You're telling me that the person who goes to the gym is actually healthier?
It's not about healthier. So what's important here is to differentiate genetics from, you know, somebody's performance. So there's some people who are genetically predisposed to be a bit more leaner. So if they eat clean, then, you know, if they continue being lean, then the gym is not a factor that's going to change their physical appearance. But physical appearance and performance are two different things. That's one. Number two, from an athlete point of view, somebody who burns a lot of calories, and I'm talking to, like, training crazy, okay? People who are training crazy can afford to load on those extra calories. Those extra calories don't have to be the cleanest. You know, for the purists out there, please don't come for my head. This is just from personal experience and what I've seen with other athletes. You can allow yourself those extra calories without any crazy repercussions on performance, as long as you're putting in those training hours. So I feel training hours over diet. But obviously, the perfect combination would be training hours and diet and proper training technique. Obviously, the guys that you see at the gym, some people use the gym as a social club. I don't know if those were the guys you were referring to, because if you're always in the gym, you should see some very, very good results.
That makes sense. Okay, the next question. Between all practices, all right, if you had to choose between any practice, so that means chiro, massage therapist, naturopath, acupuncture, etc., and you can only visit one for the rest of your life, which one would you choose?
Not physio, by the way. You can't choose your own.
Can't choose physio.
I was going to say physio, hands down.
Get out of here, bro.
Listen, it depends where you are in the world, okay? So let me explain. Chiro in Quebec is very much regulated. It's a university degree. So there's regulations, they have an order, they have specific guidelines they need to follow. Osteopathy, on the other hand, is a private school. So Abdullah, Noor, if you guys decide, you know, you want to become osteopath and you have the passion for it, you have certain of the prerequisites and you have X amount of dollars, I think it's around 12,000 to 18,000, I'm not sure how much it is, then you can go and become an osteopath. You obviously have to go take the course, but it's the barrier to entry is lower than chiro. Giving that as a general example, I'm just comparing chiro to osteo in the province of Quebec.
But you're making it sound like because osteo is a private school and it's not at the level of chiro, then it's not as legit.
The rigor, the barrier to entry is lower.
No, but
what, but then again, look, look, like I'm going to give you another example. I used to work at a clinic, and there was very, very elite fighters. I cannot name their names, but elite fighters who, you know, you'd probably watch fighting on a Saturday night, who on Monday wouldn't come in and see the physio. On a Monday after a fight, they'd come and see the osteo. You know, we had a great osteo where I was working. So they'd come in to see the osteo. With that being said, I don't think that same fighter or those same fighters would go and see a chiro ever in their life. So once again, it goes back to my initial point. In all fields and all disciplines, you have people who are top performers and who lead and pave the way for other people in the profession. So I have a lot of people I look up to in the field of physical therapy. But some people who, you know, are not 100% sure of what they want to do, barrier to entry is a bit lower. It's you know, not as rigorous of a program.
Fine. Okay. You had to prescribe.
No, no, wait. To answer, I'm going to answer the question because I didn't answer the question. I'd go see a massage therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because you also offer the service?
I offer the service, but obviously I can't massage myself. No, listen, there's something therapeutic about a massage. It's just whatever's happening, even if it's a short-lived event, right? So for me, massages have been like, I go train hard. If I get a massage, within 2-3 days, I'm back to being, you know, if I go hard in my training, back to being relatively stiff. So, but I just love massages. I just
so
love
when somebody... it comes to massages, is there a particular one, like deep tissue?
Oh, deep tissue. I have a massage therapist that I might be hiring. We're in the talks right now, but this guy has worked wonders on me. I love him. He's great. He's just, you know, I go there, I leave feeling like a jellyfish.
Damn. That's solid, man.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. You have to prescribe 3 exercises, and we're talking about, you know, like, you can't say walking or something like that. I'm talking about workouts. You have to prescribe 3 exercises that benefit the majority of the population, regardless of their age or their fitness level. What would they be?
Number one would be squat, hands down. Hands down squats. Regardless of age, look, I'd love to prescribe a deadlift, if done right, deadlift. And let's throw in an upper body exercise. I'm going to say pull-ups. I'm not going to say bench, but I'm going to say pull-up.
What's your logic behind those 3 exercises?
Okay, so everybody squats in their day-to-day life. Everybody. Whether it's a baby, whether it's your 85-year-old grandmother, whether, you know, anybody within that age range squats. So squatting is super, super important. If we can add weight to that squat, then even better. But if we can just do the motion of squatting, that's super, super important. Deadlift is, you know, posterior chain. You're working all of that posterior chain. There's some grip strength in there. There's some back strength in there. So I like that. Same thing goes for pull-ups. There's some grip strength. If you're able to lift your body weight, you're, you know, ahead of the game. And if you start and never stop, then you're good forever.
But I'm surprised between all those exercises, when we asked you which ones you would want to prescribe, you didn't say something that would prevent back injuries, since most people have back injuries. So you didn't say, for example, like abs, if the theory is the stronger your core, the better your back.
Look, I get what you're saying, but if you're squatting, and you're squatting, let's say, relatively heavy weights, your abs are engaged. They have to be. Your abs have to be engaged in a certain way to be able to produce that motion. Same thing goes for the deadlift. If you're doing proper pull-ups, then, you know, you're stabilizing with the hands, but everything else has to be stabilized as well. But listen, these are questions on the spot. Maybe I would have added abs if I would have had an extra second to think about it. But no, those are still my 3 exercises.
No, no, that's good. That's good. Okay. Imagine a scenario where people can only correct one aspect of their life, whether it be sleep, nutrition, activity, posture, stress, whatever it may be, to enhance their health. Which one would you pick?
Sleep. If sleep wasn't a natural process, it would be a banned substance on... for athletes. So if sleep wasn't such a natural process, it would be right next to steroids and other performance enhancement drugs on the list of banned substances. You get so much benefits from sleeping. And if you sleep better, you reduce your stress. If you sleep better, it just has a positive impact on everything.
What's your view on parents who hate when their teenagers sleep excessively? And I feel like it's very unnatural to do that to a teenager, at least anybody below 20.
Look, there's a sleep excessively because they're tired and sleep excessively because there's like a bit of a lazy component to it. I'm not a sleep expert by no means. I just know a lot of the benefits of sleeping. But there's a certain range that is optimal for sleeping. Anything past that becomes a bit too much. Anything lower than that becomes a bit too little. Obviously, we can survive on little sleep. Is there benefits to having longer sleep, like let's say past 9 hours? I don't know what the literature says on that, but I don't know.
The studies I read, there's a lot of studies that apparently that show that teenagers, it's not that they're inherently lazy, because that is the preconceived notion. It's just that they just need to sleep. But I don't know. Maybe you disagree.
No. Listen, within a certain growth period, you could get some extra hours. But have you already slept those extra hours and woken up and felt destroyed? When I've slept those long, long hours, I've woken up feeling like, what just happened? Who just, you know, hit me over the head? Like, I don't know what's going on. But then again, I'm not a sleep expert. I'd be definitely interested to see what the literature says. I had a teacher at Concordia. I think his name was Dr. Pham. And he was a sleep expert. He had a sleep lab. He was an Oxford graduate. The only reason he came to Concordia was because they were able to offer him that crazy lab that they offered him. But I know he's done a lot of crazy research on sleep and on dreams, the impact of dreams and the significance of dreams. You're opening up a can of worms here, a whole other realm, the floodgates to sleep here.
That is another world on its own. All right, we're going to switch gears. We're going to do one last segment here with you, and then we'll conclude. But we wanted to do a quick speed round. So we're just going to give you a choice between two things, or you have to answer it with one word, literally just one word. So do your best, and if we're gonna need to elaborate, we'll elaborate with you. Okay, so perfect. First things first, cardio or weights?
Weights.
Damn, is there a reason for that? Like, is there a specific thing that you would say?
Cardio is great, but you can get cardio within your weight lifting, which is the whole concept of CrossFit. Not the whole concept of CrossFit, don't get me wrong, but you know, it's you can see it in CrossFit. But you could compare, and they've had this study, they had this picture, it goes on Instagram every once in a while, it'll pop up in your feed, the thigh of a sedentary person and then the thigh of a sedentary senior and then the thigh of a senior who lifts weight. So lifting weight has a great impact on muscle mass. Muscle mass has a great ability in, you know, preventing muscle atrophy in the future. So the bigger your muscle is, the less, you know, you fall victim to aging with, you know, that reduced muscle mass. Lifting weight also has an impact on bones and bone density. Hence the squat, if you're squatting heavier weight, it's very good. It helps improve the bone density. So yeah, lifting weights over cardio. Yeah.
All right. What about protein, plant or animal?
Animal. I don't know, man. It's like, I'll eat a steak. You know what I mean? Like, so a lot of people
How dare you eat steaks?
No, but a lot of people are going to supplement, with, you know, liquid protein or like powder protein. And then what gives you the quality between a jar of protein that's this big for $50 or the bag that's this big for $50? So this is my understanding. I'm not a nutritionist. Please don't come at me. But the idea is that there's different building blocks for amino acids. And from the, I think, 14 building blocks of amino acids, we produce a certain amount. And then you're trying to get high quality protein with the amounts that your body doesn't necessarily produce. And that's going to change the quality of your powdered protein, whether, you know, the jar is this big and it's $50 or the bag is this big with a lot of fillers.
Definitely.
But if you're eating right, if you're eating good amounts of protein, then supplementing is often ends up, you know, in the toilet bowl.
Gotcha. Secondary or just literally supplemental.
Yeah.
That's That's awesome, man. All right. What about massage guns? Are they actually effective?
1 second.
Yeah.
So I got a funny story. Before I answer your question, I'll tell you the funny story. So I was in Vegas for Mr. Olympia in 2018, and the Theragun had come out. Theragun is the you know, the one that everybody emulated afterwards. But it had just come out, and they had a special offer there, so I decided to go for it and buy it. It looked like a cool tool, and I wanted it in my repertoire. So when I went back to Canada, they were supposed to ship it out. And then I get a notification that it's not making it across the border. Why? It has Theragun. That's what I'm thinking. Why I didn't make it across the border? So I contacted the company. They ended up sending me a second one, and I ended up receiving both. So funny story. I gave one away, but I have one. Look, I love it for different things, right? So for really tight areas like hip flexors, the Theragun is amazing. When I want to disrupt the sensation of pain sometimes with the nerve, when I want to overstimulate a nerve and just reduce pain a bit, I'm going to use a Theragun a bit. It's going to kind of, you know, if something is spazzing out, it's very good. It's going to help reduce the spaz. This is just my personal experience. I don't know if there's research that backs this up, but from what I've seen, it reduces the spaz, gives me a lot of leeway to work. Especially when it's like a sciatic muscle, sometimes I'm working in the glute area and the glute is just spazzing. Any movement I'm gonna do, it's literally just spazzing. So you can use the Theragun in there a bit. It's gonna help reduce. But yeah, to answer your question, is it good or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, effective, I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, effective for certain things.
Gotcha. Awesome. All right, what about this one? Stress management, exercise or meditation?
I'm an exercise guy, so I'm going to say exercise. But does meditation work? Absolutely. So there's this concept of getting mental reps in. Okay, so even if you're injured, you can go and watch the game that you're supposed to be playing. So let's say you're a football player, you're injured. If you watch the game, you're getting mental reps in. You're watching practice, you're getting mental reps in. Your brain is processing different ways of doing that movement. And let's say I injured my left leg, right? Well, the left and right leg are very similar places in the brain. So if I work my right leg, then my left leg can be benefiting too. So that goes into like meditation, imaging, visualization. So I'm talking more rehab, but for stress management, I think it's also a very effective technique. It's just not my technique of choice.
All right, workout, morning or evening?
Morning. Morning, morning. Morning guy? Morning
guy. I go in the morning. I don't see you.
Listen.
Why you got to call him out?
No, it's all good. We got to keep it real. We're here to keep it real. Since I've been operating this business, it's been taking up a lot of my time. I've actually lost a lot of weight. I was weighing in at 216 early Jan, and now I just took my weight 196.4. That's like a 20-pound reduction, and it wasn't like an intentional 20-pound reduction. It's I've been working a lot, 20-pound reduction with, you know, obviously we're still in the first week of Ramadan, but fasting and working is a very, very interesting combination when you're doing a lot of mental work. I feel mental work is more taxing than physical work.
How's your iftar? What does that look like for you?
Look, once again, it goes back to managing this business. And I'm lucky and privileged enough to have my parents who live 10 minutes away and my in-laws who live 10 minutes away. So it looks like whatever they're having on the menu. But essentially...
Like, do you typically eat a lot, or what's your take?
No. I don't eat a lot. You can't, if you're eating a lot, it's not a physical need. it's a mental indulgence that you're doing. So I start off with some soup, some salad, small meal, and then I'll snack on a bit of sweets. I'm a big sweet guy. So I'll snack on a bit of sweets in the night. Not too much, but if you are eating crazy heavy meals, it's you are trying to make up for what you didn't eat in the day, but that's not what your body needs. Essentially, your stomach tends to shrink, and in order to for you to fill it, it takes a lot less.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. Pre-workout or BCAAs?
They're different things, completely different things.
That's not an answer, man. It's one or the
Pre-workouts.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's like if I tell you, do you want a minivan or do you want a Lamborghini? It's like when I'm with my family, the minivan is great. When I'm by myself, the Lambo's beautiful.
Oh, so that's the wrong answer. You always go Lamborghini, obviously.
Look, there's some crazy minivans too, you know. The Maybach Sprinter. But no, it's but pre-workouts doesn't necessarily have to be those powdered form pre-workouts. Coffee is a pre-workout. Yeah, so it's I love my coffee. I'm gonna say pre-workout. I haven't taken BCAAs in forever.
Right, warm up. Do you like short warm ups or long warm ups?
Effective warm-ups.
This guy
It was
doesn't
one
stick to the
word.
rules.
Effective. No, it was the word was effective. But the long warm-up for what? You know what I mean?
For a workout.
Like some people take like, a half an hour to warm up and then they start getting the reps in. And some people it's like, 5 minutes and yalla bismillah, they're on it.
So it depends what you're trying to do, right? So let's say you're a sprinter. Okay, if you're within your season where you're practicing for that big race, there's a number of things you need to do to get to your ability to run at 100%. Is that considered a warm up or a progress into running to the 100%? So it's very specific things that you're doing. You're trying to increase your heart rate, you're making sure everything moves properly, you're making sure that everything you are going to solicit is ready to be solicited at a higher intensity. So guys who go to the gym, and let's say you're doing chest, you're on your chest and back there, whatever, however people are breaking it down these days. I always find, 10 minutes on the treadmill just to get your heart rate up, get your body ready, and then chest specific activities, and then go ahead. So the idea is you want to get your heart rate up to a level where, your blood is pumping, and then very specific to the activities you're going to do, and go ahead.
Do you
That's
finish
fair.
off with a like a cool down?
Nope.
No.
No. It depends what I'm doing. So if you're talking, once again, we're going to use that sprinting example, and I wanted to finish up with that. The guys who are competing, so let's say Usain Bolt, he has a specific warm up he's going to do before the day he runs his crazy race. But the more warm you are, the more kind of elastic your muscles are going to be. And in sprinting, you want a certain level of elastic, but you don't want too loose. So once again, it's very specific to what you're doing. But the cool down is going to come into when you're getting these crazy heart rates up. So when you're getting your heart rate up, you need to bring it back down. I used to see cool downs a lot in, when we're finishing a football practice, or if you're doing CrossFit after a CrossFit workout, there's a bit of a cool down period. But even then, it's kind of like fading away.
Okay, I have two more for you. What is the most overrated health trend?
I don't know, anything that has to do with juicing. Yeah, anything has to do with juicing.
Just
I
what you mean, just liquids?
don't know, like name me five trends and I'll tell you which one is the most overrated. I'm not the best to keep up with the with the fitness
Keto?
trends.
Yeah,
Keto.
keto. Carnivore's diet. Cryotherapy. Let's go with juicing. And
I mean, there's different kinds of juicing.
that
We can talk about one of them, too.
One of them works.
Yeah, let's say it to those four. Which ones would you say is overrated? So keto, carnivorous diet, cryotherapy, or juicing?
I think they're all good. I don't think they're overrated. I think people make them overrated. I don't think those things are overrated. Listen, the keto diet is more of a you got to see it as a lifestyle, not as a diet. So that's it for that. But like, you know, some people are, it's just the people who like, you know, it's like vegetarians or vegans. They want you to know they're vegetarian and vegans. So people who are on keto are like, yeah, like I'm on my keto diet. It's a lifestyle. It's, you know, it's not bad. Carnivorous diet. I've read a lot of good things about it. I've never practiced it myself. I don't have access to that much meat, but no, it's I don't think it's bad if done the right way. Cryotherapy has been proven to be amazing, but obviously you have, you know, the same guy who's going to do his cryotherapy is often the guy who's a weekend warrior. That's what we see online, because the guys who are truly doing it day in, day out are not posting about it day in, day out. Not that I'm saying that posting about it is bad. I'm just saying it's the trend kind of ruins the
effectiveness of it, or like the
no, it's not the effectiveness of it, but like it kind of ruins it because it becomes a trend. Everything that becomes trendy is a bit, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But no, it's been proven to be good for the heart. It's been proven to be good for the joints, for current pains, surface level pains, deeper pains. It's I love it.
All right, as a professional physio, someone who is in the medical field, practitioner, obesity, do you think it's a choice or genetics?
I think it's a great combination of nature and nurture. I think it's both.
That was six words.
I can't answer that in one word. I can't answer that in one word. But look, what I do know about it is that, once again, the brain is very important in here too, right? It's tough. Like, I don't think people who are obese would like choose willingly to be obese. You know what I mean? I don't think they eat the food they eat saying, I want to be obese after eating this. I think that if they can eat the food without being obese would be their ideal situation. But cravings are tough. Addictions are tough. I think the same guy who's, you know, gambling his life savings away is, you know, as I'm not comparing obesity to gambling, but there's an addiction component to it.
But if you had to choose one between it being more of a choice or more of genetics, which one would it be?
Like, where would you lean more, nurture or nature?
I think, I don't know. It's a tough question. Okay, it's a tough question. It's a very loaded question, and to answer it with one or the other would me not be doing justice to the people who have a genetic component to it, or the people who have a more less of a genetic component to it. You know, if your parents are obese, you're more likely to be obese. Is that because of the genes? Is it because of the food they give you as a child? Is it because of the food they provide you with, the choices they provide you with? You know, I feel like we've said, I've said so many controversial things. I hope that the internet doesn't come after me, or that the physio order doesn't come after me, please. I have, you know.
Oh, this is solid. Honestly, no, at the end of the day, like, your opinions are always going to be your opinions, but, you know, so nobody should take it, you know, personally or anything like that. It's not like you speak for the order as a whole, for sure, no doubt about it.
Absolutely, but I don't know if there's a legal component to me saying divulging certain information that I've divulged. But listen.
No worries, man. But honestly, that's, look, we're at time, so we're not going to take more than that. But we do want to say that we 100% appreciate you for doing this. This was a lovely conversation overall. I think there's a lot of things that the audience can learn, no doubt about it. What would you say are the best places for the audience to just kind of follow you? What are some of your socials that they can kind of, you know, just keep track of what you're up to?
Absolutely. So Instagram is a place that I'm very active. So my ad is Fadi Physio. I also have the clinic, which is Omnicure Physio. If you guys want to follow those on Facebook, Instagram, we also have a Google page. And if ever you guys are in Montreal in the West Island, pass by 4507 Sources. We're always welcome. We always welcome new people in. And if I'm not busy, you want to come and chat, have a coffee after Ramadan, then I'd be more than happy to have you.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good, Fadi. Thank you very, very much. Jazakallah khair, and we'll hopefully do this again. Honestly, this was a good, and I think we only
Inshallah,
scratched the
man.
surface. We
Yeah,
just
no, I'm
did that.
excited to do this again one day.
Sounds good. Sounds good, my man. All right, yalla. We'll take good care of yourselves, guys. Once again, Abud, any closing remarks?
No, I'm just looking to doing it again in his clinic. That'd be nice.
Yeah, that would be sick,
Yeah.
actually. That would
We
be
have a
nice.
nice place here. We have a lot of windows, as you can tell, they're closed, but you guys can come through. We'll set you
Definitely,
guys
definitely.
up. We'll set you up on
Bring
certain
some equipment.
machines. We'll show you how some things work. It's a very interesting place.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good. No, we'll definitely make it happen, inshallah. That's definitely something we'll take up as an offer, inshallah. Sounds good. All
Inshallah.
right, boys. Well, with that, don't forget, once again, it's not about the comments, it's not about the likes, it's not about all that. Just share it, share it, share it. That's all we ask. If you guys found any benefit in this, please just give it a share. And we'll catch you guys next time. Ciao, ciao.